This compound is built on top of an Indian burial ground.
Crap, is it the anniversary again already?
Hi! Welcome to Venture Bros. Venture Brothers Podcast. Me, your host, as always, Brian Dressel. With me, as always, is Nicholas Cinnamon Friedemann.
Full of sin, that I am.
And Mr. Grandpa Mason.
Hello. A pleasure to be here. Yeah.
When I was in college, I used to call Grandpa, and it was pretty fantastic.
I like it.
Mm.
It's a great name.
Yeah, it's one of the older nicknames that I've had.
Yeah. I mean, it really just flows right off the tongue. Tongue.
Tongue.
Tongu.
Is that a Godzilla
villain? Doesn't
flow
off, you know what doesn't roll off the tongue? The word tongue. Anyhow.
Or simonin.
Salmon.
Words that sound alike. Simonimins.
Simonimins.
What's a synonym for cinnamon?
Synonym for synonym?
Yeah.
Synonym.
M&M?
Salmonella. All
right, let's talk Venture Brothers. After that winner of an opening.
Oh, yeah. All-time great.
Yeah, see, this is why that one person gave us a 3-star review on iTunes.
What are you... Come on.
You know,
this is gold.
You know what?
Cinnamon.
They could have given us a 1, and they gave us a 3. So I'll take it.
All right.
It was a fair assessment, you know.
But effectively, does that mean that we each get a 1?
Yeah. Well, I got a 2. You got a 1. Nick got a 0.
Whoa.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't know what episode it was, but that does sound pretty fair.
Yeah.
Is it just because he's Canadian at the moment?
Yeah. Yes.
The exchange rate on stars between U.S. stars and Canadian stars is not very good.
Accurate. Oh. I noticed that.
Yep. You got to keep an eye on that exchange rate.
It's true.
Okay, so today's episode, season 2, episode 3, Assassinanny 911. I'll do a quick rundown. Basically what happens in this one. There's a lot of pop culture reference in this one, which is always fun. But this one starts with Brock getting a message that his old general has basically gone insane and he needs to go put him down. So he's off doing that, having a very James Bondian / Apocalypse Now adventure, while he gets his one-time not-lover, Molotov Cocktease, to watch the family, and she decides that she's going to train the family to no longer need a nanny or bodyguard, and while they're doing their thing of learning to not need a bodyguard, Brock's off trying to find his old soldier his old general, who turns out to have always had the rule, no women, no children, and when he finally finds him, he's turned himself into a woman, so he lets him live, and the boys, I don't even really remember what happens to the boys at the end of the episode. I was way too tied up with Brock. What happens to the boys at the end of this episode? Nothing?
Hank tries to kill Rusty.
That's right. That was so good. Hank tries to kill Rusty.
Yeah.
And then we find out that he wasn't even using a real machete. He was using a paper mache sword, peed his pants, and then fell asleep in the most Hank of Hank assassinations.
It's true.
And the Apaches haunt Hank's trunks.
Oh, my God. We'll get to that. Oh, boy. You know what? We'll just get to it right now. There's a few things in this show that I love more than many things in my life, and Hank is one of them. Hank is one of my favorite characters in pop culture, just period. I love Hank. This is one of my favorite Hank episodes just because of that one sequence.
It's great.
Him running around the pool screaming, "My pants are haunted," when he gets his boner. It's so fucking good.
It's incredible.
Well, and what gets him into that scenario when he finds Molotov Cocktease and Dr. Venture on the couch, and then he assumes that they were just making out or what have you. And then he screams while he's underwater.
Just a big...
Expels
big inhale
expels all
scream
of the air out of his lungs and drowns himself accidentally. Such a Hank thing to do.
It's true. And like,
I love that.
Stumbles into a Sandlot sort of plan of making out with Molotov cocktails.
Yeah, totally stumbles into it. Like, Squints had that plan. Like, he was ready to go with that plan. Hank just fails his way into success.
It's true.
Yep.
But I really enjoy, as I was saying, I love Hank, and I love the more intelligent Hank gets, and he doesn't get that intelligent. Like, it's a bit of a stretch. But the more intelligent he gets,
I think it's just age.
Yeah,
I think he just gets older.
The older he gets, sure. I love dumb innocent Hank. Like, it's so good.
It's
being afraid of his boner is just, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It's really
and
great.
And it's also Dean. Like, Dean's also not aware of what just happened. No. He just, the Apaches are back. There's a teepee in your pants. Like,
oh, it's Dean. The best. They have, like, I mean, I think that's what works about, like, the first two or three seasons is, like, their kind of, like, blissful ignorance is kind of what keeps them sane for the longest amount of time, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that because they have each other, it also helps as well. Like, you could look at Rusty when he was, like, an only child, didn't have anybody to do that with. Like, he was just surrounded by adults who were like, he'll be fine. And that was, like, his whole childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it also helps that they have each other. Like, that's also a big...
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Like, if it was...
I mean, it also kind of enables them to have these moments of just the weird development that just takes a hard left turn.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're both now just making this worse. But at least you're having fun together.
Very true.
Yeah. It's... But, like, just looking, like, over, like, everything that happens in this episode, it's kind of interesting. Brock, our note taker, he wasn't a huge fan of any of the stuff with Molotov cocktails in this episode. He's just...
What?
He loves the Brock storyline. He's not a big fan of everything else. And I usually agree with Brock, but I kind of go opposite on this one. I love the Brock finding gathers and all that stuff. It's all good, but it's all just kind of like, it just surfaces to make some pop culture references and then introduce a character who will become way more important later on and just kind of give you an insight to the OSI, but it's not really the story of the episode. The story to me is more the boys at home.
Yeah.
Actually, I'd argue that the story of this whole episode, this is Molotov's story. Because it gives her interaction with Brock initially, or at least now, and then throughout the rest of the episode, it introduces her and the whole, their whole history. You know, Brock's whole history of no women, no children, and all of this. I would argue that this is Molotov's episode.
Well, so we agree that it's not Brock's.
Correct. Yeah. Well, I mean, he's definitely there.
Yeah, for sure.
He's definitely, you know, the impetus behind the whole thing, but it's definitely Molotov's episode.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's definitely Molotov's episode, but I would say it's less Brock's and more just the family's episode with Molotov there. Because I like the backstory. I like seeing the insides of OSI. I love the way they introduce Gathers with the whole, like, you don't know shit and then flying out of the helicarrier. Like, I love all that.
Well, expect the unexpected. Be ready for anything.
Oh, you're still ready for anything.
So,
well, I think that the episode actually is Brock's episode, but I think that the stuff that actually directly involves Brock is not necessarily the most fun, because everything back at the compound revolves around Brock as well. It revolves around Brock's umbrella of protection and kind of like what he represents to Molotov and what he represents to the boys and what he represents to Rusty, but he's just like this specter that's there. But I think the stuff actively involving Brock is not nearly as interesting as the stuff is back at the compound.
Yeah. It's again, that thing that I always kind of come back to. It's like, I love it when this show does like random pop culture references. And that's a lot of what's in this episode, but it just didn't move anything forward in a way or tread water in a way that I found particularly interesting. Does that make sense? Like,
yes.
I'm fine with it. I'm fine with bottle episodes. I'm fine if you're just going to hang out in one spot, as long as it's entertaining. I didn't think that any of this stuff really grabbed me beyond the Hank moments.
100% agree.
Yeah.
Like, I like Rusty hitting on women out of his league. It's always entertaining to watch, but I've seen it before, and I think I've seen it done better.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like,
and he gives up.
Yeah, he gives up, which is not Rusty at all to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It
would have been better if he gave up quicker because of how hard she shut him down. But she didn't really shut. She just wasn't interested, which is like not enough reason. At least for Dr. Venture, not enough reason for him to stop trying. Disinterest is hardly a reason for him.
It's never stopped him before.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't ring as true to his character as possible. But what's interesting to me, so going from the last episode, where that episode is amazing, but entirely forgettable, I've actually remembered this episode more. But while watching it, I'm kind of less entertained. I use this episode more for historical value of Brock's history, Molotov's history, and then like Hank's hallucination moments, and then that's pretty much it.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like his,
but I do remember it more than the last episode.
Well, I think it's also because it's more of a exposition dump than the one before. The one before is just kind of like it's just crazy and fun and. There's even some things I forgot to mention the last episode that I still loved, and like there's so much to just kind of like just kind of pour over in that one. Whereas this one, it's like you can dig into like the world building in here, like especially with the OSI stuff.
Oh my god!
But it's just like I don't know. Like I agree with you. Like I watch it and I'm entertained because it's Venture Brothers, but not anything beyond that.
Yeah.
I think Brock, our note taker, gave this one a 3 out of 5, and I'd pretty much agree with him. I think that's pretty fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the problem with me for this episode is that it feels to a certain extent like retreading ground that we've already kind of tamped out and set up foundation for and everything else. Like, the best part of the episode, in my opinion, is Hunter. I think Hunter's like the funniest bit, and we don't even get nearly enough of him as we want. Molotov, right. We already kind of know what we're getting with her, and seeing her backstory with Brock was also fascinating, so that's okay. But we've already talked about, like, and Hank actually was really important, but like Rusty is just kind of there. He gives up. It doesn't feel like a very Rusty sort of like sequence. And Dean, they just don't really know what to do with Dean at all on this episode. They kind of give him something with Triana and her friend who may or may not become a supervillain. But that's about it. Like, there's a bunch of people that are left at the wayside, but then also included. But then the times that they're included is stuff that we've already seen them do, so it's not particularly engaging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a just to throw it out there. This is Kim's first appearance, which is kind of cool. I like Kim.
Yeah.
Kim just felt like, and we'll get into it more when we get to Kim's episode, where she plays a much bigger role. But I feel like Kim is a character that they are going to do a ton with, and then change their mind.
Yes, it has to be.
Which I don't know. Unfortunately.
Yeah, it's like one of those, like, oh, I can't wait to see what they do with her. And then, oh, I guess they're not going to do anything. Because she really disappears fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is the first time.
Because when she came up here, and then later on in this season, I'm like, oh, yeah. Wait. No, nothing happens.
Yeah. Dang it. The curse of foresight on her is like, oh, well, I as cool as it is to see you here, I know it goes nowhere after this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe in season 7?
We'll see.
So far, no. But who knows?
Who knows?
With this show, and I've said it time and time again, really fucking anything is possible.
It's very true.
Yes. Yes.
This show is the king of deep pulls. So it's like, yeah let's just wait and see.
Yeah.
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 You never really know until you know. And then even then, you might be wrong.
Yes,
but there's one thing in this that I feel is really important to bring up, because I could be wrong. I know Brock would be, if we had had Brock on this episode, he might know better than I do, but I believe this is the first time they bring up Operations Rusty's Blanket.
I'm almost positive.
The phrase? Yeah.
Yes. It is? Okay. Which becomes huge later.
Yes.
And then not at all. Kind of how we've been talking about, like, yes. Oh, you don't know until you know, and then you know, and then it doesn't matter anymore.
Yep.
But to break that down into the initials, Orb, it's the first real nod to it, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
Especially because you spend this entire episode with Brock, not the entire episode, but good chunks of the episode with Brock as a young starting out agent in the OSI. And you immediately can tell this guy is good. Like, we've always known that because we're fans of the show. But, like, they yeah. throw, you know, Thunderball-esque divers with spear guns and a hammerhead shark at him. And he uses the diver's fucking air tanks to kill the shark.
Yes.
Like, he's good. Why is his job...
In training.
Like,
yeah. That's not, like, now. That was in training. What was that, like, 20-something
yeah,
years ago or
like,
something?
Yeah.
At least 10.
Like, that was his motivation, was to very much try to kill him. Why is this guy being in charge of doing lice checks on the boys?
Yeah.
Like, it's a really good question that, like, I like that this show answers.
Yes.
Because as cool as it is that a super scientist has a badass bodyguard, it still feels out of place, even for this world. And this show, this is the first kind of, like, edge of... Oh, we're going to explain that.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially because, yeah, Dr. Venture's, like, biggest threat is the Monarch, who is easily defeated.
Yeah.
By Brock. It's like, okay, I mean, I guess that kind of explains why somebody would be there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, why him? Way overqualified. I mean, you were even talking about it in last episode when Phantom Limb... was in an odd reference talking about, yeah, they're using level 5s against a level 1 threat.
Yeah.
I mean, no offense against Dr. Venture, but you're like, okay, so there's even levels for this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, there's a level... So Dr. Venture is considered a level 1 threat. So then what the hell is Brock considered as a level as far as defense? Like, what?
It's gotta be, like, level 10.
What?
He'd have to be.
Something.
Yeah. Like... He's...
Yeah, actually, because if deadly weapons, which is what he was referring to, the actual guns that the gangsters were using were level 5, so yeah, Brock has to be at level 10, level 20, or something. I don't know how many levels there are, but yeah he's got to be way up
for
there.
Sure.
He can kill. He you know his choice of a weapon is a knife, and he can kill
yeah
everything with a knife.
Which they.
Well,
oh, go ahead, Brian. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, without diving too much into, like, well, not really spoilers, season 6 was last, or years ago now, but when, like, Brock leaves the family for a while, and it's not till Rusty is deemed a level 10 that Brock comes back to work for him. Like, when he comes a level 10 protagonist, if you will, that's when Brock comes back to work for him full time.
Yeah. Okay.
So, like, Brock is definitely cool. A level 10. Like, he's as high up as you can get.
Yes. Okay. So there are 10 levels.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yep. The one other thing I wanted to bring up, at least with, like, with Brock, is that this is probably the first episode that we get where he's matured. They established that, like, you know, okay, so to give an example of this is the episode in the first season where he has to get his license renewed and he refuses to use a gun and he, like, does all the damage with a knife and the guy gives this amazing speech where he's like, I respect you, basically. This season, he repeats kind of like the same thing in a similar sort of situation where he's talking to an OSI agent that kind of is giving him the information that he needs, and he refuses to take any of their gadgets and everything else, and he uses just the knife, blah, blah, blah. I think instead, because in the previous season, he did it through a show of force. This season, he also does it through a show of force, but a restrained show of force. And at the beginning of the episode and at the end of the episode, they reiterate that he feels at home. In the same sort of way that we didn't think that the Monarch was, like, 100% truthful with talking to Dr. Girlfriend in the last episode, do you feel that Brock is truthful when he's kind of like, I'm happy here? It seems to be the implication when he's talking to Molotov at the end of the episode.
I don't know.
Or,
like,
that he's trying to say it to kind of more prove it to himself
sure.
than to prove it to
yeah,
her.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, here's the only reason, again, using foresight on this, that I would say he's telling the truth is when he has to work for Sphinx and not tell the boys that he's nearby,
right,
it bothers him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he full-on says, like being near the boys and not being able to tell them that I'm watching them. Like, it annoys him. So I'm not sure if he's lying to himself or thinks that he's lying to himself to try to convince him that he is there. But it could be kind of like the Monarch, where he is there. He does love taking care of the boys, and he does love the boys, but maybe he doesn't realize it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate, especially right now.
Yeah, like, because I think he does want to be there. He knows he wants to be there, but maybe it's one of those things where, like, even he's not aware of how much he wants to be there.
Yeah, I think that's right.
But either way, like, I love the way he says goodbye to Molotov. Like, just that whole, like, the whole speech, and then just the go team venture. Like, it's so good.
It's honestly great. Like, I think that Molotov to him kind of, like, represents this former life. Like, she definitely was everything he wanted as a young spy. But it's weird. Like, they've slowly kind of, like, edged her out of that kind of role for him. Like, she always is there in that way, but, like, I don't think he pines for her in the same way.
No. I think the only reason why there'd be a slight that he still does is because she was always, to put it as her name, she was always the cocktease to him. Like, she was always that, like, just out of reach. So she can always kind of dangle that in front of him to get him to kind of edge back to it. But I agree. I think that he's matured. He's grown past that part of himself.
Yeah.
And even when he does kind of, not necessarily regress, but does move on and join Sphinx and does all these sorts of things, it's still, he's not the young gun agent that he was before.
Yeah.
But yeah. They are perfect for each other, though.
Yeah.
Oh, God, she took the cigarettes!
But he kept her eye.
It's true.
It's so good. There was something that I thought was interesting last week's episode, which kind of plays into this one, that my wife and I were talking about. There's a moment where somebody says something about how Dr. Girlfriend is like the picture of perfection. And Brock says something along the lines of, like, perfection, I'm still looking for scars. And it's like, we were talking about it, like, it's kind of true. Like, she's now, like, Brock has made it clear he is not attracted to Dr. Girlfriend. Like, she does not do anything for him. Like, he really wants he wants a woman who can kick the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, well, looking forward, we've kind of jumped forward a bit. There's an amazing sequence in a later episode, which I will not spoil, where Brock is fighting this one woman, and he's like, I'm getting a real good fight out of you. And he's just, like, really into that moment. And I think that there obviously is something where it's like he is like an adrenaline junkie. And I think that, like, he's a sexual adrenaline junkie. I think that that's all he really wants for the most part. As far as who he wants as a partner, I think, different than who he wants is like a one-night stand.
I think there, yeah. For the one-night stand, I don't think he cares as much. For a partner, if it's not dangerous, he's not into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's very self-destructive, not good for him. But it's totally what he wants.
Yeah. And I think that's why, kind of his perfect match is Molotov, because they're very equal. So it's like they could potentially destroy each other, but they know each other's limits enough to where they come just to that edge.
They'll walk as close to that line as humanly possible.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is there anything else in this episode that we've missed? I think we've hit a lot of it pretty well.
Yeah. I think so. There's not a lot to go over in this episode because a lot of it is exposition that we either can't get into for future stuff or that it just doesn't quite hit the mark for me, at least.
No, I agree, because I like Hunter, I like Gathers, I like all this stuff, but I like them all more later.
Yeah.
But I think, I think this is kind of what we were talking about with episodes in season one, to where some of the drier episodes or the more packed episodes are probably more, I don't know, say impactful or more important as far as world building, but they kind of fall flat as actual episodes. And I think that's kind of true for this too, to where it's like Yeah, the A and B stories were there, but it's more exactly like you were saying, exposition, more world building, more kind of laying the structure for stuff to happen later, so that when we bring these characters back or these stories back, you kind of know what we're referencing from what we've told you before. But as an actual episode, it's like, yeah, there's really not too much to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although we did fill a whole half hour, so who knows? I guess there is plenty to talk about. But let's move into favorite pop culture references. I already kind of casually mentioned mine when talking about Brock. My favorite James Bond movie of all time is Thunderball. I love Thunderball. It's just pure Sean Connery with pure corniness of Sean Connery in this like wonderful thing. So anytime there's even a slight nod to Thunderball, I'm excited. And the second the divers came swimming at him with their spear guns and everything, I'm like, oh, Thunderball! So I'm hoping that's what they were actually going for, and if not, I'll just assume that it was, and that is definitely mine.
That works.
Yeah.
Do you want to go next, Graham, or do you want me?
Shh. I'll take it. I'm going to jump in. One of my favorite moments is the Molotov and Brock interaction of when Maul actually calls Brock in one of his many Thunderball moments being rocketed away. He's like, you neglected to tell me the compound is built on an Indian burial ground. And then
oh, we didn't really talk about that
the moment
all.
Yeah, just like the close up on her face, and then kind of zooms out, and then you just see just ghost horses and Indians running around just causing amok. Just Brock's reaction of, ah, is the anniversary again? Oh, man. And then, yeah, Dr. Orpheus comes by. It's like, they didn't have leap year. It's like, oh, man. Just such a good throwaway. I don't even know if it is 30 seconds, but such a beautiful moment. I love it so much.
I totally agree. It's a great moment. Anything with Dr. O is a great moment, though.
True. I totally, completely agree with that as well.
All right, to go with, because it's a very James Bondy episode, I will point out that my favorite pop culture moment is the woman that Brock meets on the beach is wearing the Dr. No bathing suit, Bond girl suit. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, yep, that's it. I was like, oh, Dr. No. And then continued. I was like, moved on. This character doesn't make a lick of difference for this episode at all.
Although she does appear to be dead, and Brock does nothing to see if she's alive or not. She just kind of rolls over like, where'd you go?
Super weird. I had a question about that moment that I crossed off because I was like, eh, whatever. But like, the timeline of this is very confusing. That's all I'll say. It makes no sense that Hunter would write on her stomach and then immediately go and get a gender reassignment surgery. Like that... How? What? Why? Anyway.
Yeah, you really don't want to unpack that one. It gets real confusing real fast.
Yes.
Yeah. I hadn't watched it in a long time, and so I watched it the one time, and it kind of just blew over. And then when I rewatched it, I was like, wait, what?
Huh?
What?
Yeah, definitely.
Did he send the doctor?
Yes, this is exactly That's what weird. I was thinking. It was like, that doctor? No fucking way. There's no way.
He can't. Yeah. There's no way that doctor can write English.
That doctor, Brendan Small.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Doing the same voice as one of his characters on Comedy Bang Bang.
I wonder if he does that voice on Metalocalypse ever.
I bet he does.
Yeah, I bet he does. Anyhow, let's move into plugs on this thing. I will plug, as always, After the Hype. Be sure to check us out there. Check out our new show, Samwise. And then please, on all of these shows, rate and review us on iTunes and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. It helps us out. And we really appreciate it. Helps us keep making these shows for your ear holes. That's it for me.
Mm.
And apparently everyone.
Next.
Play Assassin's Creed Odyssey when it comes out in October.
October,
soon.
Right?
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, soon.
Yeah, super soon.
Okay. And then Graham?
Super soon. Cosmos.
Just good. Again. Yeah.
It's good.
2 weeks in a row on Cosmos. Well,
All right. So, Dark Tower. Yeah, it's a good series.
Oh, the movie.
Another. The audiobook or regular book form.
I really like the movie a lot better, though.
Did you see the movie?
No, God, no. I was just trying to get a rise out of both of you. No, no, no. I didn't watch that fucking drivel. No.
Oh,
I was thinking about it.
I was so disappointed in you for like 30 seconds.
I'm a big McConaughey fan. What can I say?
So I had a memory of it, and I was like, oh man, I kind of, as I was like listening to the audiobook, I was like, I could totally see this movie with Idris Elba and David Tennant. That would be really cool. And then I remembered later that it was Matthew McConaughey. I was like, oh, fuck that movie.
Yeah. Oh man, that was one of those ones where I had the trailer came out and people were like, oh, it doesn't look that bad. I'm like, this looks like garbage. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And then it turned out to be garbage. So with that, thank you for listening. And yeah. Bye.
Boy.
Bye.